The production delivery agreement is a new animal. I think it will be if you haven't done these transactions. And so we took a great deal of time to give you sort of, I won't tell you we gave you the text, but we gave you the points to consider. It's going to sound strange if you think about it as an override, but if you think about it as a transaction in which one party is a creditor expecting to be repaid out of the proceeds of production, it makes it a little easier to understand. But the things that you normally look at, to me at least, the main things that you normally look at are the obligation of the working interest owner, the operator, to market the production. You always offer the override owner the right to take his production in kind because, again, there may be instances where he wants to do that. You have provisions that talk about the standard for operations by the seller, you know, good and workmanlike conduct, reasonably prudent operator. You will, in a larger transaction or in a multi-well transaction, as you heard Michael talk about a few minutes ago, you should expect to include development plans. You should expect to include provisions in which the working interest owner cannot abandon the wells without the overriding royalty owner's written consent, and maybe even give him the option to take over the well if the working interest owner is going to abandon it. And again, the reason is the overriding royalty owner is looking to recover his funds, to recoup his investment in the deal. And so consequently, he's going to want a lot more control over what happens to the wells from which his cash flow is coming than in your normal garden variety overriding royalty conveyance. He's going to want information regarding the well. You can expect that he will probably want to see logs. He'll probably want to see not necessarily daily reports, but some kind of monthly reports. He'll want to know about joint interest billings and their status of payment and all that sort of stuff. You can expect that he'll probably want the right to audit the working interest owner's books. You'll normally include a clause regarding refunds. If he has underpaid the overriding royalty interest owner, those amounts are usually due with interest. On the other hand, if the audit reveals that the working interest overpaid the override, that refund is usually done out of future cash flow and done without interest. Defaults and remedies, I think, is self-explanatory. But the last thing, and this is an unusual provision in an override deal, but in a financing-type override transaction, it's not unusual at all. Because the seller has these obligations to deliver production and or pay money, it's not unusual for the overriding royalty interest owner to take a lien and security interest on the seller's remaining interest in the properties or on other assets. And again, I believe the Sabine case and the ATP case support the proposition that even if you do that, that doesn't change it from a true sale of an override into a sham loan transaction. Recording. You know, we all go through the same thing over and over again. You've got a purchase and sale agreement. If it's not recorded, and the seller sells the property out from under you before you've actually got your assignment in place, you've lost your chance at an investment. On the other hand, there are business terms and conditions in that transaction that you don't want to disclose to third parties. So I would recommend that in a PSA for a term override, you handle it just about like you would if you were buying Blackacre from a seller. Either elect to take the risk or record a memorandum of the agreement, bearing in mind that once the memorandum is recorded, third parties, if they're looking at the property, third parties, I think, may call you up, you know, given the duty of investigation they've got. The assignment, beyond question. An overriding royalty interest is an interest in real estate. It's a real right, and therefore it must be recorded in order to perfect and protect the interest of both parties. The production and development agreement, that's really more in the nature of a service agreement. It's an obligation to deliver production and or cash. The production has been severed from the ground. So consequently, it's more in the nature of a personal personal property contract. The only thing I would suggest you do record is that if you take a mortgage or a security interest in the seller's assets to secure his obligations, there's no choice but to record that. Farm outs come second because most farm outs involve a transaction in which one party, again, has acreage or has a working interest, and he needs a well drilled for various reasons, and we've gone into some of the reasons in the paper. So he finds a third party, or sometimes a third party finds him and offers to perform services in order to earn an interest in whatever acreage that the farmer owns. And the parties to the transaction, you know, one's a farmer, the other's a farmee. And in the paper, we've called a property that's subject to the farm-out agreement the farm-out property. But that's usually a working interest, but sometimes it's a mineral feed.